You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So before Jasmine Sullivan said, I'll break the windows out your car, you said, I'm going to ram your car, huh?
For sure.
That would have been your theme song.
That would have been my theme song. And they called the police on me. The police officer comes up to me. He's like, ma'am, what seems to be the problem here? And I'm like, well, my husband brought his girlfriend to my house. I had a problem with that. And the police officer was like, I see how that could be a problem. I'm going to go talk to them.
That's what I'm about to say, too.
I was like, yeah, go do that. He didn't arrest me, but he made me go see CPS.
Every second that escapes without you here with me keeps my heart anticipating till I finally see you.
When I made my vows, I told God that I was going to take care of this gift.
All my life I've been waiting for you. Girl, you know I've been praying for you. Been writing these love letters to you.
So I fight for that future in the present. You know what I'm saying?
That was good.
Congratulations to the ones who found love, for the hope and new beginnings from heaven above. I await my future wifey. I pray that it won't be too long. Too long. Every second that.
Welcome to the Dear Future Wifey podcast. I'm your host, LaTerrace R. Whitfield. Listen, are you still shacking up with us? If you're still shacking up with us, can we get a commitment? Hit that subscription button and subscribe. Make sure you turn on your notification bell so you'll be notified about upcoming episodes. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, why don't you rate this episode and leave a review? That's how people are notified about the Dear Future Wifey podcast, and it helps build it in the algorithm. Well, you know, it's certain people that I've always wanted to talk to on the Dear Future Wifey podcast. And today's guest is absolutely phenomenal. I remember her when I used to attend the Potter's House growing up. I was 18, 19 years old. I used to do the plays at the Potter's House. I used to act in those plays. And I remember her when she was yet a little girl. And now she's growing up to be an amazing queen. Welcome to the Dear Future Wifey podcast. The woman y'all all love, Sarah Jakes Roberts. How you doing, queen?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I didn't know that you were at the Potter's House.
Yes, I was at the Potter's House way back then when Chris Hill was the youth pastor and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was there. And then I did a skit. Someone posted a video on Facebook of a skit that I did years ago. They allowed me and my friend Montre Bible to come and do the skit during the Sunday service.
Wow.
Where, you know, they used to have like youth day or whatnot.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
the youth would take over the service sometimes, like, you know, once a quarter or whatnot. And so we did this skit where I was this inmate that went to jail for killing this guy's wife. And it just so happened the guy that was witnessing to me, he was a pastor and the chaplain that had to give me forgiveness. Mm. And so it was this cool little skit that we did then. And then I did this play back then called God's Got All Power, where I acted in that play with DJ Street and all that. So yeah, I've been closely connected to the Potter's House for several years. It provided the foundation of spiritual growth and healing from when I rededicated my life to Christ at 18 years old. So the Potter's House has been very instrumental in my spiritual growth.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. You have an amazing dad. I always, like, when God called me to ministry way back then, I would always look at him as someone that was very in tune to the word, can offer a different level of insight in the word of God. And so I was always like a huge fan of his. He's just very studied.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, and I've seen the mantle has fallen on you.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's so interesting, man. So how do you feel being who you are perceived by many? Like, you're this woman that has been very transparent about your upbringing and childhood or whatnot, and you have created this amazing platform called Woman Evolve.
Thank you. You know, I didn't necessarily set out to create a platform. I really was just trying to figure out what was happening inside of me through writing. And I started this blog. At the time I was married, I was in my first marriage, and I was writing this blog under my married name. There was no Jake's name attached to it. And I just thought that it would be this little corner of the internet where I got to talk about my pain, my shame, my trauma. And it turns out that there were other women who needed that as well. And so what started as a blog kind of continued blossoming and snowballing into what Woman Evolve is now. But I can't say that I intentionally was like, I'm going to be in ministry. The mantle is on me. Like, I didn't set out for any of those things. So it feels, I don't know, I have to work through a lot of my trauma to reconcile the fact that I had to become comfortable loving myself, even if I was rejected by other people as a result of me being a teen mom. And so it's kind of overwhelming to be in a situation now where there's a lot of people who show me a lot of love. Sometimes it feels unsafe.
Why?
Because I think just from my trauma of just like rejection can come very easily. Yeah. We live in cancel culture. You can say one thing and then they don't love you anymore. And because that's already my wound.
Oh, yes.
It feels very unsafe. And so I have to work through that. But I love the delegation. They show me a lot of love, and I'm honest with them about where I am on my journey. So I think they understand that.
You know, when you think back on that, like, even when you talk about being a teenage mom, by today's culture, that doesn't seem as polarizing as it was back then.
Yeah. 'Cause
even when you say that, I was like, what's the big deal? And I was like, oh no, go back then. 'Cause yeah. I was a teenage, a dad. My daughter was born my senior year in high school.
Okay.
And I remembered how devastating that was. And so when I look at you now, I'd be like, so what? So you still feel? And I was like, oh yeah, I remember. And not only that, but you were, you know, a PK, not just a PK of someone that had some, you know, a smaller church, but someone that had a mega church, a mega ministry, somebody that's worldwide. How did you deal with that embarrassment or shame or whatever word you want to attach to those emotions as that young girl navigating that space? How did you deal with that?
I think added context too is purity culture was at its peak when I got pregnant.
Sure, right.
Okay.
Pinky promises and everything.
I promise you. And nobody wanted to be the girl that was the lollipop that got passed all around.
Is that what they called
it? Yeah. Like, if imagine there was a lollipop and I gave it to one person and then I had everyone in here take a lick. By the time it got down to me again, I wouldn't want it anymore. That's who you'll be if you have sex before marriage.
That's exactly what they were saying.
For sure. And then so not only did I have sex before marriage, I have the evidence that I had sex before marriage.
Yep.
And so I think for me, it was just confirmation that I do not belong in relationship with God. So I grew up in church. My siblings can all sing.
Oh, you got to stop right there. You said that was confirmation that you didn't belong in relationship with God.
Yeah. So I grew up in church. And so my indicator of whether or not you could be in relationship with God was how well you did church. So can you shout? Can you clap on? Like, can you sing? Can you dance? Like, what can you bring to church that allows you to be in relationship with God? I had nothing. I had nothing. And so when I got pregnant, I'm like, so you have nothing. You are nothing. And so I don't know. I wouldn't have called it shame then. I would have just said, this is confirmation that you don't belong. It wasn't until years later that I was like, I think I'm ashamed. I think I feel broken. I think I feel like I've messed up beyond repair. But I think at that point, it was like, this is confirmation. So you might as well do you, whatever that looks like.
Yep.
Just separate from here and you'll figure it out on your own and leave the God stuff to the good people.
Leave the God stuff to the good people.
Yeah.
And you were how old at that time?
14.
14.
I had my son at 14.
Internalizing all of this.
For sure. And I mean, that's just the church side of it. But to be 14 years old and somebody's mother at a time when you're trying to figure out high school. And
that's what I was about to ask you. What did that look like in high school?
It was...
what school did you go to? You was in private school or something?
We did in Richardson. So we were actually homeschooled before I got pregnant.
Okay.
Homeschooled the year that I got pregnant. But then I needed to... academically, I'd always done very well. And I think it was at a point where I needed some more hands-on instruction. And yeah. So we found a small private school that would work around the fact that, you know, I have a kid. And so I needed a little bit more flexibility in my schedule.
Oh, Lord. So how did they look at you when you went to, was that open knowledge, public knowledge while you were in school that you were this teenage mom coming to school?
It was not until my sister made an announcement in the lunchroom. So they were having a conversation.
She didn't make an announcement, did she?
She did on my behalf. Wow. Thanks, sis. So we're in the lunchroom and they're having this conversation about teen moms. And they're like, how could you be so stupid? Like anybody who has a baby is teen, like they're dumb. And I'm just minding my business.
Sitting there taking it all in.
And my sister's like, well, my sister's got a baby and she ain't dumb. And I was like, wow. Thank you.
Talking about thank you and so no thanks at the same time.
Thank you, less. Could we do less right now?
Thank you, less.
Thank you and less at the same time. And so that is when everyone found out. And so even there where there was some separation, now it's like, oh, you're one of the dumb girls that got pregnant.
How'd you deal with that? Were you sheltering your child during that moment? Or like, would you, on parent-teacher conference, would you bring your kid with you? Or would you just be like...
It was very separate. I think I had a close friend. Her name was Susie in high school at the time who would come over to our house. She knew my son. But beyond that, I kept it very separate. I internalized all of it, though. So even though I didn't give it language, I think my parents were really focused on me, like, surviving. Like, how are you going to survive after this? If there was no, like, how did that make you feel? How are you coping? What's your view of yourself and your value at this time? And so I had to figure out all of this on my own. So I ended up internalizing the messages. You're dumb. You're dumb by church standard. You're dumb by regular world standard. And so I internalized all of those messages. And I think it took me a long time, I think, even into my womanhood to come to a place where, like, people would tell me, you're so smart, you're so intelligent, you're so this. And it was hard for me to receive that because I'm like, but I did this.
Yeah.
And so reconciling that was hard.
Were you always a high performer academically?
Yes.
So did you feel success in that area?
I did, but I couldn't figure out, like, how are you smart here, but you did this?
I mean, when you think about that, it's like, we all wrestle with that at some point in our lives.
Yeah.
We'll take success in one area and then diminish it in another area and still saying that, no, this is, and grades don't have emotion attached to it.
Right.
You know, a child has emotion to it. A lot of times when you're having sex, it has an emotion attached to it. And so we're comparing two things that shouldn't even be compared. And so how long did it take? You talk about as you evolved into this woman, at what point was it a defining moment that you no longer let the little girl continue to be your identity and say, no, this is who I am at this point. And little girl, you have to die right now because I've evolved.
It was probably in that first marriage when I was just talking about this while we were waiting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was in this first marriage. We were bad for each other. It wasn't like he was bad and I was like, we were not good for each other. And at this point, he had brought someone to our home and I got upset. I get in my car. I start ramming the car that he and her are in over and over again.
Oh, he brought a woman to the house.
Yeah. So she was waiting.
In front of you?
Yeah. She was waiting in the car and he was like in the house doing things. And I looked out the window, noticed his car was running. The girl's in the car and I lose it. I get in the car. I'm ramming the car over and over again. They call the police on me.
You talking about you was hitting the back of it or back and like?
Back, yeah, just back and forth, back and forth.
She said just back and forth, just back and forth. So back, before Jasmine back. Sullivan said, I'll break the windows out your car. You said, I'm going to ram your car.
For
huh?
sure.
That would have been your theme song.
That would have been my theme song. And they called the police on me. The police officer comes up to me. He's like, man, what seems to be the problem here? And I'm like, well, my husband brought his girlfriend to my house. I had a problem with that. And the police officer was like, I see how that could be a problem. I'm going to go talk to them.
That's what I'm about to say too.
I was like, yeah, go do that. He didn't arrest me, but he made me go see CPS.
Why CPS?
Because the kids were at home. And them being in an environment where things could be that volatile. Okay.
Yeah. Because y'all were still living with each other.
Yeah, right. We were married.
But y'all weren't going through a divorce?
No. We were very much so, like, he was home for dinner. It's wild. My story's been an interesting journey.
So he just thought it was wise to just pull up with her in the car?
Yeah, I don't know. It was the situation was not ideal. Because
I would assume that y'all were going through a divorce and y'all just going through whatever, and then
we
pulled up.
We were still very much so. He was like, this is my friend. We're just kicking it. I knew you were going to act like this. So it was very problematic.
You're talking, I knew you were going to act like this, you think?
So when I was leaving the CPS office, though, I was like, something's got to give, because this little girl in me is making decisions that the adult version of me is going to have to defend. And I just had to really come to a place where I isolated from distractions and begin to really deal with what was happening inside of me, where I was, I'm going to say, almost addicted to rage, because I think I'd become so numb that rage made me feel alive. And I just wanted to get to a place where I could feel alive because of joy, because of peace, because of contentment. And not that I needed just deeper and deeper levels of rage and anger and pain to get me to a space where I felt alive.
Well, let's put a reference around this. How old were you during this time? Well, how old were you when you got married?
I was 19 when I got married. 19. But context again, if I could get married, then nobody will know that I was this teenage mom. Like, I could finally get this scarlet letter off of me. And so I think a lot of the messages that we send to women, specifically in religious environments, is one, marriage is so validating.
Yep.
Like, you may not have any worth or value unless you're married. And then if you're a single mother, then you definitely need a man. You can't raise this child on your own. And so any man will do. Like, they're not even talking about the qualifications of the man and what is a healthy home. And what does that look like? And I got to a space where I was like, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that I could be a better mother by myself than I could be in a marriage trying to tear one another down for the sake of holding up an image.
And how old was you when you came to that knowledge?
22.
So you were married for how many years?
By the time it was finalized, 4.
So 4. And so around 22, which is like the year before the divorce was finalized, you came to this knowledge like, I can't do this. Coming out the CPS office, you like,
this, I can't do this.
I can't do this no more.
So, and I was living in Virginia at the time. So right outside of DC, I was like, I'm going to go back home. So my parents weren't there. That's the other thing, is that like, it wasn't like I could just get in the car and go home. I had no friends. I had one friend. She was raising her family. It's not the kind of thing you call like, girl, I'm over here ramming cars. I need like backup, you know? So I was like, I'm going to go home. And by the time I went home, I was incubated by love again, kind of reminded that I have a life outside of this. I have some worth and value outside of this. I believe it gave me the strength to say, I think I could do this on my own.
But then how did you feel? You just talked about how the church idolizes marriage and make women feel like they've arrived once they have someone that said, I do to. Now, not only were you this teenage mom, but now you have the scarlet letter D on your forehead. How did you feel having to share that with the world?
All I knew for sure within myself is that anything was better than what I was in. Like, I couldn't. Anything was better than this. And sometimes our relationship with God is so deeply personal that you cannot look for validation from other people, because they will not fully understand that though it may look good on paper, at the end of the day, what's happening on the inside of me, I don't believe I'm called to live this broken. I don't believe I'm called to live this angry. And I have to do something that may not make sense in the world, but for the sake of me feeling like I can connect with God, I can have a relationship with the Lord, I have to do something that keeps me from being damaged over and over again.
Are you fed up with the loneliness, frustration, and uncertainty that comes with the search of your soulmate? I've heard your cries of frustration, your doubts about ever finding your purpose partner. But here's a game changer. It's time for a shift. Maybe you've tried everything, or perhaps you're seeking a community to accompany you on your journey to lasting love. Well, I'm LaTerrace R. Whitfield, host of the Dear Future Wifey podcast, and I've spent the last 4 years deep diving into the world of love and relationships. With over 200 interviews under my belt, I've uncovered invaluable insights that have transformed countless lives. I've guided friends away from fruitless relationships and towards their one true match, their purpose partner. I've restored marriages on the brink of collapse and facilitated life-changing experiences through lit one-on-one cohorts. Now, I'm thrilled to introduce Identifying, a groundbreaking group coaching program designed to help you discover yourself and find your ideal match. Now, this isn't just another self-help course. It's a roadmap to fulfillment, crafted from years of research, experience, and real-world success stories. Now, in a world where dating has never been more challenging, Identifying offers a beacon of hope and practical guidance. With self-paced modules, live coaching sessions, and exclusive resources, this program equips you with the tools you need to navigate the complex world of relationships with confidence. Don't let the misconception that true love is out of reach hold you back. The investment in yourself pales in comparison to the cost of staying stuck in unsatisfying relationships. The time to act is now. Choose a future filled with possibility and connection. Join us on this journey of self-discovery and love. Register today and take the first step towards a life of purpose and passion. Identifying. Identify you. Find them.
I think what you just said is going to free a lot of people. Because a lot of people are living life in the masquerade. They're hiding behind, especially in the church, because they're finding validation. And I remember even for myself, when I actually filed for divorce, I've been divorced about 8 years now, and it was the hardest thing for me to ever do. Try not to break down, you know, mess me up. See, I shouldn't have you sit down talking to me. But it was the hardest thing for me to do is because I said, going before people and feeling like this, I'm just faking. And I said, God, I want to tap into you. I want to get to know you for me on a deeper level. Raised in church, knew all that type of stuff. But it comes a time where you say, I don't want to get validation from other people based upon what you see externally. I want validation from God, from what he knows about me internally.
Yeah.
And so that's what that spoke to me about. And then I hear so many people that DM me and say, you know, I'm going through this and I don't want people to know this. I don't want my family to know this. I don't want my friends to know this. People will lose a job and won't tell anybody that they're unemployed because they don't want to look unemployed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, but you're unemployed.
Yeah.
And if you share that, maybe somebody can offer you a job.
Yeah.
You know, but like, I don't want people to think that I need them. You know, but you do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it's these crazy things that we do in our lives. Did you ever, when you got divorced, did you still desire marriage?
No, I did not. You know, I desired to be in relationship with God. I desired to take care of my kids. I had this vision. I was like, I'm going to be like in my 40s, just like traveling the world. I bought a house in Grand Prairie. Like I was like me and these two kids. When I bought my house in Grand Prairie, I was like, this is going to be the house where I send my kids off to college from. Mm-hmm. This will be home for me. And I was completely and utterly content. Like my life made sense to me and me alone. I was grateful for it. I may have had those scarlet letters, but I had found joy. I knew who God was. That's the thing about marriage too, is that like we always use that scripture, what God has put together, let no man put asunder. But my insecurity built that marriage. My shame built that marriage. My trauma chose this spouse. I didn't even consult God about it. And that's not to say that God can't make certain things work together, but there are some ingredients we're asking God to make work together that God didn't even say that he wanted in our lives. And so I think, I don't know if you've ever like put something together before and you get to a point where you're like somewhere, somehow I didn't jack this up. Yeah. It don't look like the picture.
It's like it's missing some pieces here
we
and there.
We have to take it all apart, lay out all of the pieces, and then say, I'm going to start over. And for me, divorce was very much so me saying, somewhere along the way, and me trying to build this life that other people would approve, and me trying to build this life that I thought would make me happy, I messed up. And so I'm going to take it all apart. And God, I'll only build what you tell me to build. And the only thing I knew for sure was that I needed to take care of those kids and that I needed to be in relationship with the Lord. And that was enough for me.
And you were about 23 years, 22, 23 years old coming to this knowledge.
Yeah, 23.
And had given up on hope of marriage and said you was going to be the auntie one day.
Yes.
And you was okay with that.
I'm totally fine with it.
Walking into church and being like, hey, I don't
this
care.
Is this, this is it. It.
This is me.
This is it. Here I am. Here I am. It's fine. I still want to be here. I still want to worship. It's not that those of us who go to church haven't experienced church hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we haven't been rejected or disappointed, but there does come a stage in some of our lives where we're like, you know what? What's waiting for me in that room is more important than who's in the room. And there is something about corporate worship that it's like going to a basketball game or a football game. Like, yeah, you watch it at home and it can be amazing and it can be riveting. But when you're in the room, there is something that happens. And so in order to overcome that, you have to get in the spaces that you say, you know what? I may have to look past so-and-so. I may have to walk past this person, but what's in the room is valuable.
What happened at what season or time did you decide to just come out and be like, because I remember having a conversation with Derek Williams one time we was in LA and he was talking about right before you started releasing some videos or something, I don't remember what it was for, but it was really well produced, but it was something that was going on. But it seemed like that was the first thing that I started seeing you come out with. What am I referencing?
So I was writing this blog all throughout me going through the divorce, going through these transitions. I'm still writing this blog. I reverted back to my maiden name, but I'm still writing this blog. A publisher comes to me and they're like, hey, would you tell a story about your life? Like, would you write your memoir? They thought at the time that I was just writing a memoir about a teenage pregnancy. By the time I got finished talking about CPS and waitressing at places, they was like, ooh, we need some legal. We need some legal things here. And so in the release of that book, I did like a docuseries called Lost and Found.
Lost and Found. Yeah. That's what it was. Yes. Yeah. That's what I was watching. I was like, all right, she's coming out.
But the thing is that like I had just gotten to a place where I was like, this is my story. I'm going to love it. I'm going to own it. And I'm just going to walk it out. And I think what gave me confidence in doing that was I was just tired of pretending that it wasn't my story, trying to build a life on top of the story. I was like, I'm going to work with the pieces I have. And then I found out that there were a few other women who were like, oh my gosh, now finally I feel like someone sees me. Someone's giving me the language I never knew that I needed. And I was like, for the sake of them and me, like I'm going to tell this story because I believe God's grace still applies to us all. And so I'm going to go and try and find as many women who need to hear that message as possible.
And see, for me, because I didn't know about the blog that you were doing and me being in video and theater and all that stuff, that was the coming out for me when I saw it, because I was like, yeah, something great is about to happen.
Mm.
Because you can see certain things with movements. I always watch movements. Teray said that to me when he was on the podcast. He said, you have the ability to perceive things before it happens. And I was like, that's interesting. He said, this podcast is just one room in this mansion that God is building. And God is bringing extensions from the room of this podcast. And he prophesied that I'll be signed to Jan Miller. And then 8 months later, Jan Miller, we have a conversation. He said, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm a represent you as your literary agent.
Wow.
You know, but that's what your husband did. Prophesied that. But that was that moment when I looked at you and I said, something is brewing, you know, she's coming out, because I never heard you speak or be outward and pretty much show your face. You know what I'm saying?
Which is funny because you were at the Potter's house. So you, like anyone who was at the Potter's house when I was growing up knows that like I was not the one running to the stage to
ever
do anything.
I didn't even know you existed.
Period. And she was fine there. Period.
And the only time I knew you existed was when you got pregnant.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's your shame that brought the attention of, oh, that's a daughter. Oh, she pregnant? Oh, what? You know, when does she even have time to even have sex? Like, you know, what is that? Like, it's all this stuff that you look at and be like, wow. But me being a teenage father, I just felt seen. You know, when I looked at you back then, I was like, well, you know, if the bishop's daughter can get pregnant, then, you know, I don't have to carry the shame of me being, you know, having been a teenage father to an amazing daughter. But so even in the midst of other people may look at him like, oh, I can't believe it. For me, it was like, okay, thank you, God.
Wow.
You know, thank you that we can all fall short in these moments, and you can give us a blessing even in the midst of our sin. Because I never look at my daughter as some bad mistake or something. Yeah. I look at it as my blessing. And so, here you go. You were in this mindset of, you know, never getting married. You were lost and now you found. The memoir became a bestseller. You're doing all this stuff. What made you start saying, maybe God is about to do a little bit more to me than just me sitting here writing these, you know, these blogs or whatever. Now God is calling me to be in the forefront. When did that happen?
It's happening.
Well, Sarah, if you don't know by now, let me tell you something. Let me just tell you what's going on by now.
Well, I think what happened was people started asking me if I would come share my story at their church. And so I was like, I can share my story. Like, because now at this point, I am obsessed with this idea of finding that one girl that's like me in any city, in any church. And I'm like, okay, I will go. And there are some places I went where I would tell my story. People would gasp in the room. Like, they were like, what? And I mean, from black church to white church to anything in between, like, I would go and share my story. And then when Derek, who you referenced, introduced me to PT. They're like, there's this amazing community in LA. I think if anybody needs to hear your story, it's this community. I'm going to connect you with the pastor. We go to lunch or breakfast, rather. We have an incredible breakfast, but it was really just about God's grace. And like, it really wasn't anything romantic at all. He was coming to an international lead. Oh, at that breakfast, he invited me to come speak at his church for Mother's Day on a Sunday. I was like, I'll do panels. I'll do Saturdays. Sunday is out of on Mother's Day. Away from my mother.
Sunday afternoon,
I will do a brunch, but like Sundays are not my thing. And like I'm like, Derek, he should probably know Sundays aren't my thing. And I told my mom, I was like, this pastor thinks Sundays are my thing. And she was like, you should do it. And I was like, hold up. So I'm like, whoa.
And Sunday, Mother's Day is the biggest attendance.
Right. And you're my mother. And I should be with you.
I should be with you, Mom. I want to be here with you. Please tell me to be here with you.
And I went there. And yeah, that was the beginning of a lot of things.
No, how did you feel walking in there and on a Sunday, and his church is attended by a bunch of celebrities and all that stuff, and here you are. We ain't gonna say you were preaching because I don't want to scare you,
right?
But you were talking.
I was having a speech, yes,
in front of an audience of people on a Sunday morning service.
When I went to give my speech,
the Easter Day speech.
If there's any community for people who feel like I don't fit in church, I believe one's it. One, I think somebody left this on a Yelp review. Like, one is a church for people who don't like church.
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, they're so loving, so welcoming, so kind that it just felt like talking to people who you could take them anywhere you wanted to go and they'd be okay with you. And so that is really where I got like my training wheels when it comes to speaking, because I started speaking there. PT and I fell in love. And then when we got married, you know, he'd asked me to pray after a service. I had never prayed out loud in front of people before. Like, wow. I had this secret relationship with God that I protected from people who would ridicule me because you're a teen mom, you're divorced, like you can't have. So I had this secret relationship with God. But PT ends up like making a demand for what was in me to show up outside of me. And that's why I always, if you ever hear me speak, I always credit him for helping me connect the dots for this deeply personal relationship with God that I was just so glad to finally have. Like, I was so glad to have it that I didn't even care if it was a secret, but he put me in a position where it was like, you know what? Your secret could really bless someone. And so just pour from that space. And he's been one of the most, I mean, he's an incredible friend. He is an incredible father.
Look at you smiling out big. Why are you smiling out big when you start talking about him?
Because that is my man.
my man, my man.
my man. But who he is as a spiritual mentor is just so much divine confirmation.
You ain't gonna just skip over speaking at the church one day and then talking about you married the next.
It's a lot.
Yeah, okay. We gotta talk. So how did that happen? How did that transition happen from speaking at the church on that Sunday, giving your speech at the church on Sunday, to now being what do you consider yourself, a co-pastor?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Co-pastor of the church. So, because that's a transition, but it shows God's divinity. What happened?
So we went to breakfast in February. We attended a conference together in March. When we're at the conference in March, we're texting each other because the person is speaking about everything we had just talked about at our breakfast in February. And then the last day of the conference, I was sat right beside him, and he had been talking to me all throughout service. I was like, sorry, I'm trying to listen to the word.
Why are you distracting me? I could tell he was feeling you.
Something was happening here. And so in my head, I'm like, first of all, I'm not dating, but I'm like, something is happening.
You weren't
happening.
Even dating?
No. I was like.
So after your divorce, you didn't date nobody?
I had situations, but I didn't go into a relationship with anyone. I was so committed to not making the same mistake that anytime there was a flag, I was like, no, thank you. So I was in my no thank you era.
I would love to hear how you treated dudes during that time. Like, were you just having, you didn't open the door for me. This is over. You're not the one. He's like, God, I just forgot.
Well,
like, how picky were you?
No, I wasn't very picky as much as I was just like, I'm not going to ruin my life again.
Ruin my life.
So it was not like about whether or not you open doors. It was like, do you have integrity? Like, is there a sense of transparency here? Do I feel like you're playing games? I'm not asking you, like, what is this? Like, if I don't know what it is, then it's nothing. Like, I'm not going to be begging you to give me a label. I'm not going to hand that control over to you. Like, it is or it ain't. Like, I just gotten to this point where I was like, I'm not doing that. Everything's fine.
I don't want
to
ruin my life.
I'm not going to ruin, because I was on my way to prison. Do you understand? I was on my way to prison. And I will never forget when I was married, my mother and I were watching Snapped, and my mother's so classy. She's like, I do not see how they do that. And I was like, I do. I do. And she was so alarmed. She was so alarmed. I'm like, girl.
Okay. You gave birth to one of them.
Okay, you're looking at your future if I don't get out of this thing. So I just was committed to not doing that again. But we were sitting there and he was talking to me and I was like, I think he likes me. I don't think he would ever actually ask me to go to dinner. But, you know, we had this great conversation. At minimum, like, I'm grown enough that, like, we could go out, we could have lunch or dinner and it not be a thing. And so I gassed myself up and I was like, when this is over, I'm going to tell him, because I knew I was going to L.A. I was like, I'm going to be in L.A. in a couple weeks. You're going to take me to dinner. I rehearsed it in my head. Like, I was ready. So as soon as the man said amen, I was like, I'm coming to L.A. next week and you're going to take me to dinner. And he was like, yes, ma'am.
He was like, yes.
And I was like, period. And then I walked off. And I thought that was it.
In that moment, did you have any type of romantic feelings? Thought he was cute? Anything?
We had chemistry. Okay. I would say for sure we had chemistry. And I just wanted to explore the chemistry.
Okay.
But I thought I was going to be finished. Like, that was my final words. And I was going to walk off. And it was going to, like, very much so give the energy they're supposed to give. Then I saw him backstage. And here I am, like, hiding behind the wall. I was like, oh.
Why would you hide? Why you hide?
I only had enough courage to get my line off, not to see you again.
I was going to wait to L.A. to see you again.
We had that dinner in L.A. And it was amazing. It was amazing.
What did you hear in that conversation? That, because it has to be, because you got to think about it. If you're dating people, you were dating people like a lot of dudes date, because you ain't planning on getting married.
Right.
So dudes be dating people with the lack of intention. What did you see in that moment on that date that may have started changing the tide, and or did it not? Were you just like, okay, cool, somebody can kick it with?
No, it definitely changed the tide. Because our first conversation, where like we were talking about our divorce, we were talking about like what divorce taught me about marriage, yeah. who we became, why did we get married, why did we get out of those marriages. And so that was our initial conversation. Whereas in previous situationships, like, oh my gosh, you're pretty, or you know what I mean? Like, what's your favorite color? Which, like, sure, you know, sure. But when you start having like a life conversation yeah, with someone, real. It was different. And so he called me after our first date at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And he basically told me that he was praying about what had just happened, because he was like, this was absolutely
that man,
insane.
That man didn't go to sleep. I bet he stayed up the whole time.
That sounds on brand.
He's sitting up like, man,
this, what was this?
What is happening right now?
And he said God revealed to him basically that I was his wife. And then he was like, I'm going to send you this list. He had this list of all these things he wanted in a wife and then who he would be to that person. And
that's what he told me last week.
Yeah.
So last week he told me, he said, God, that's so powerful. He said, don't just write what you're looking
right.
for, but write who you will be to that woman.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, because he was talking about, you know, a relationship that I was in that he was privy to. He was like, so what's the update on that? I said, it's over. It's been done. He was like, oh, okay. He said, next time, write a list on who you're going to be for
yeah.
that person. He said, that finalizes something on a different level. And I was like, I've never thought about that. I'll write it at the end of each episode. Like at the end of each episode, I write a letter to my future wifey and I talk about what we'll be to each other, but I never ever wrote what I would specifically be for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave you that list. And when you read that list, did you see yourself?
Yeah, for sure.
How'd that make you feel?
I think that in order for something to get my attention at that stage in my life, it would have had to have been that strong. And it was certainly that strong. And then even when we were dating, there would be moments, my son and I in my house, and I'm like, now I've got this man who's like caught my attention mm-hmm. and I haven't introduced it to my kids yet. Cause I'm like, this is, I don't even know what this is. This yeah. is like life-changing love. And my son was talking to me about something he was experiencing.
That's like a name of a nice book, Life-Changing Love. That's
yeah.
beautiful. Yeah.
He was sharing with me that he's like, he was having some issues with his biological father. And he was basically saying like, I know he's not going to be the type to ever like take me out for ice cream, but I just wish that it would be X, Y, and Z. In that very moment, my hand to the Bible, PT sends me a message and it's him and his son Isaiah out for ice cream. And there were so many moments like that where I was just like, this is God. This has got to be God. And I needed something that, because I was so committed to protecting my health and protecting the wellness of my children and my development, that God had to invade my space with that much confirmation that I had no choice but to acknowledge that it was him.
That was scary for you, huh?
It was petrifying. And he lives in LA. So we're yeah. talking uprooting my, I've bought a house. I'm finally happy. I finally feel free from shame. And now this man is coming to, I have wrote this. I'm like, it is so much harder to love a real one than it is to be in relationship with a fraud.
Say that again for the people in the back.
It is so much harder to be in relationship with a real one than it is to be with a fraud. It's just hard, because someone who holds you accountable to who you say you want to be, someone who recognizes your potential but meets you where you are, someone who wants your vulnerability. Like, I want to know how you think. I want to know why you made the choices you made. It requires a level of intimacy that you never have to do when you're just trying to see if someone's cheating and checking phone messages. And like, you don't have to be vulnerable in those relationships. You got to be tough. You got to be strong. You got to be hard. But now here comes someone that says, I want to be your soft place. And you got to figure out, how do I tear these walls down? And you have to figure out, how do I give this language? And how do I let them know up underneath this strength that there is still a broken 13-year-old girl, a broken 15-year-old girl. And I got to let you see her, and to let you see how she sometimes gets upset and flares up. And it's petrifying to let someone that closely into your space.
Was there any moments where you tried to self-sabotage it? Moments where you tried to maybe break up with them along the journey, or moments where you, that little girl or that broken ex-wife rose up and you was like, I don't know, I don't think this is going to work. Did you ever have those little temper tantrum moments, as I call it?
I did have those, but I don't think that I gave them language. I think it showed up in the way that I shut down in the marriage. I think even into our marriage, not just in our dating. I think even when I was in Dallas, I still felt a sense of safety and autonomy. When I moved to LA, now I'm like dependent on a man.
And it takes you back to that when you moved to Virginia. Where were you at?
In Leesburg, Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah. It took you back to that moment. Now you're away from your
safe
space.
I'm in another city.
Yep.
I'm dependent on a man to like figure out where the grocery store is.
Yeah.
And also someone who's trying to figure out like, you know, why do you make the choices that you make? And it just felt like it was trauma on top of trauma on top of trigger. And I think that there were just moments where I would just shut down. I would not speak up, or I would get angry over small things. And it took me, oh my gosh. So we got married in November. It was the 4th of July of our, so maybe like what, 7 months into our marriage. And I had frustrated him. He had frustrated me. And we were trying to figure out why we were frustrated. He was like, I'm going to go out for like a drive. And I was like, cool, enjoy. And he finally comes up to the room and he looks me in my eye and I'm looking at him and we like pitiful, but still a little bit guarded. And he was like, I think I need you. And I was like, I think I need you too. And needing someone when you have been so proud of building a life of independence, to say that I need you, that I don't think I can build this life without you. I don't think I can raise these kids without you. Like, it's one thing when I want you, but I need you. It was a defining point in our marriage, and it changed the way that we chose to work through things, because we no longer saw one another as optional or accessories. We realized that in order to be one, we both have a relationship with God. So it's like, my destiny is connected to your breath. And I can't act like you don't matter to me. That I can live without you.
Sir, you trying to mess me up over here. You need to quit. You need to just quit talking. Good Lord. Your destiny is connected to their breath.
Yeah.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You feel like that.
I do. I do. And the strong, independent woman in me wants to be like, girl, you got this. Don't ever say that. Why?
Don't you say that.
Don't people you say are listening. That. But I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it without. He steadies me. He knows how much it costs me to be me. I can't raise these kids without him. They'd be half the version of who they are. And so this is what they say, what God puts together. This I get it now. Like when I was married before, people would say they were married 40, 50, 60 years. I'm like, why would you do that? You could have like two or three marriages at that time. Like you could try all of these different things in that. Why would you do that? Very ignorant. Very ignorant.
Bro, why would you do
why
that?
Would you do
why
that?
Why would you do such a thing?
And now I'm just like, PT and I have almost been married 10 years and it feels like a blink of an eye.
Wow. It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm still stuck on the whole thing that your destiny is connected to their breath.
Yeah.
When did that moment happen? When he said, I needed you? Or was it some defining moment that y'all had in y'all relationship and y'all's marriage or whatnot, where you said, I don't even want to do this without you. This is, I realized that you showed up in this moment when I couldn't even show up for myself, that it was only you. It wasn't my mom, my dad, my kid, nobody, my best friend. It was you that showed up for me in this moment. That was a defining moment that would make you utter those words.
It was that moment, that I need you moment. I think that just changed the course, because you just, I mean, when you're grown, you're successful, like you just, you don't really need anybody. Yeah, like you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you, and I think that that's a good place for you to be in. Like, I'm not discrediting that space, but when God gives you confirmation that somebody's supposed to be in your world and this is your partner, then you have to think to yourself, like, if God says I need you, I might need you, you know, and you just have to surrender.
Yes.
To this reality that, like, I'm going to have to do the work to make sure that we stay connected. And yeah, that's, I would not be whoever I am to the world if Teray Roberts wasn't my anchor.
And that was the first year of marriage.
Yeah.
Not even with little over half a year of marriage where that defining moment happened.
For sure.
And so the way you did your marriage from that point on, it was going back to that moment of need and not, because yeah. It's an important thing that you said there when you talk about the independence and the success of many people. Most people, when they achieve a certain level of success, they look at marriage as being, you know, a stumbling block sometimes. It's like, yeah. Well, why get married? I got my life together. This is perfect. I don't need nobody coming in and interrupting that. But I love that you provided reference around that and saying, I'm not trying to discredit that, but you can, and when you marry the right person, the level that God wants to take you, you could do all this by yourself. You can do all, whatever you can do with your own merit, you could physically, mentally, from a knowledge base, intelligently do.
Yeah.
But then when God brings your purpose partner alongside of you, you're able to achieve things that you couldn't even fathom to achieve that, which is interesting how instrumental God was in your love journey, is because the very first opportunity that you had to speak in front of a large body of people on a Sunday service was cultivated through Teray.
For sure.
Isn't that crazy?
Not only that, even what his church that he built, what that experience is very similar to what a Woman Evolve experience feels like, because I was exposed to different expressions of the anointing. When God gave me the vision for Woman Evolve, I was not restricted to feeling like it needs to be Essence Fest or it needs to be the Potter's House of Dallas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it didn't feel like, hey, it's either going to be this or that. It felt like it could be a blend of them both. Like,
yeah.
You could bring the best aspects of both of them into an experience that makes a woman feel fully seen. But I knew that because I'd gone to one, which there were some days we would leave Activate. That's what we called our Thursday night services. It started at 8 o'clock. We would leave Activate. It would like people would be sweating from worshiping, like, and just getting up and receiving the spirit of God. That it was like leaving the club, but like with the most spiritual high you have ever experienced. When people were leaving Woman Evolve in Arlington, like people were in the airport singing songs. It was like this big homecoming. Wow. But it was rooted in having encounters with Jesus and being healed and transformed. And that made me feel like I could do that anywhere.
What I saw was people walking in Walmart on the first day. Now they haven't even started. I just think that what do you call it? Not orientation. Where do you go?
Like registration.
Registration. Uh-huh. Had taken place. They had to come there early that day and do registration. But I just saw people walking around with their lanyards or whatever. Yeah. And they were just so proud. And I was just like, and I would just mess with them. I'm like, so what you doing this weekend? We doing what? And it was this level of pride that people have. And what it felt so good to me as a man, as a believer, as a blood-bought Christian, I said, this is the type of joy that we should carry. Yeah. And the beautiful thing that God has orchestrated through you is that he allowed a dispensation to occur in your life that when they come and converge in whatever city you decide to do it in, and when you do them, is that all these people are getting activated and then they go back to their respective places.
Yeah.
That's Sarah, do you realize how powerful that is? Do you realize how favored that is? Mm-hmm. You know, and when you think about when I saw the video, now, of course, when I saw the video, I felt as a father when I watch your father pretty much give you the mantle and put his coat on you. And I looked at that moment, and as a dad, I cried.
Mm.
I literally cried because of the great exploits that Bishop has done, you know, and then he says, you're worthy.
Yeah.
How did that moment feel to you?
I think that moment meant more to me as a daughter than it did as a woman in ministry.
Told you. Knew it.
Yeah.
Knew it.
One, my father has blood, sweat, and tears to build anything that has his name on it. And it was restorative in a way that I didn't even think that I needed.
Yep, I saw it.
It felt like he was saying, I will put my life's work in your hand. I trust you with it. And I think to be trusted after having broken trust, not just in the pregnancy, but in everything I did after the pregnancy, when I was like, I'm not one of the good girls. So I'm going to go see what they're doing.
I'm going outside in Jesus' name.
But it felt like he said, I trust you. You have what it takes, not just to do this, but I trust you with my life. And so, I wasn't expecting it. I didn't even know what that was going to mean to anyone else. That's what people were like, aren't you next? Aren't you next? Woman Evolve existed before Woman Thou Art Loose. And you can't make people go anywhere.
Yeah.
And yet something happened in that moment where people were willing to say, hey, we will at least go check out what's happening at Woman Evolve. And they came. And then let me tell you, when they came to Woman Evolve, we were 40,000 strong at Globe Life Field. Yep. But I did not plan for 2024 because I'm like, this could be a one-off thing where people are like, pass the baton. I'm going to come see what she's doing. All right, I'm going to go back home.
You really thought that it wasn't going to continue?
I mean, Woman Evolve will continue, but maybe not at this scale.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe not at this scale, because that's a lot of people.
You think?
And the conference before that was 3,000 people, which was a lot of people. I don't feel entitled to big results. Like, I just feel entitled to my obedience. Like,
I don't feel entitled to big results. Do you know if we could really normalize that ideology? Because we actually believe when I do this, I need thousands of people to do it. Yeah. If I drop this course, I need thousands of people to do it. If I sell this book, I need New York Times bestseller. Yeah. We have a different expectation because it's great that we serve a God that is limitless like that. But sometimes we operate from a level of entitlement as well to be able to say, well, I mean, what did I do wrong if I only have 3,000 people there when I wanted 100,000?
But I mean, 3,000 people is a lot of people.
It is.
You know what I mean? So,
but not if you're comparing yourself to what Bishop was doing.
Exactly. But to me, also, you have to understand that, like, I'm not even supposed to be here. Like, this was not my life. This was not my plan. So for me to now get here and to act like, oh, it has to be this or I wasn't successful. Like everything that God does from this point on is like multiple cherries on top, like not just one cherry, it's multiple cherries. So I literally like there is no failure at this stage in my life, because God has already, what God gave me when I was 23 years old, where he was like, I can love you in spite of, it may not look like what you experienced in other churches, but I can tell you right now, I will love you who you are right now, babies and all. Like everything after that, Teray, Woman Evolve, book deals, like all of that stuff is just icing. So I didn't plan like, okay, now I'm going to be the girl who has conferences in stadium. I'm like, hey, this was nice. When I announced it on Saturday of the conference, I'm like, so here's the thing. I don't have plans for 2024 because I'm not going to go get a stadium and 5,000 of y'all are coming, because we could go back to the house. You know what I mean?
We go back online.
And I was like, so if you're going to come and it doesn't matter what city we have it in, all I know for sure is we're going to have it in fall. If you're going to be there, if you register right now, it will just give me a sample for what size venue I need to go through. Because there's a lot of stages between 40,000 and 3,000. You know, like American Airlines is 20,000. That's half of y'all. You know what I mean? The Potter's House could probably do about 10. Yeah. And so like you all just let me know. And 10,000 people registered that week. And I was like, okay.
So what did that tell you? What size venue do you need, Sarah?
I think we're going for a stadium again.
Okay, then.
And here we are.
When is the date?
September 26th through the 28th.
September the 26th through the 28th. What made you pick that weekend?
It's availability.
Yeah.
It's availability. So, because it's not just the venue. We also have to see, does the city have enough hotels to host this many people? And then it's during football season. Yep. So, and then we need an indoor stadium, right? Because the one thing we're not going to do is rain or heat. Okay. Because you want to see girls come out, the Holy Ghost is let these edges start slipping and me sweat dripping down my back. God don't want that for me.
He
has an air conditioned praise for me. And so by the time you narrow it down, our only options were St. Louis or Arlington again. And because people had already gone to Arlington, it just felt like if we're going to move, then we may not want to move into St. Louis. Let's just do what everyone already knows.
People don't know how much work it takes to put on a doggone conference.
I was in over my head.
God, it's so much work. It's a lot, because even like that, to even have to consider, we bring all these people in, are they going to have somewhere to stay?
Yeah, because then they're going to be, there's not a hotel anywhere. There's not a hotel anywhere.
And you're going to get blamed for it. She didn't know it wasn't no hotel for us to stay in.
Yeah.
She didn't know. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just so much. And so how did you feel doing that, your first conference on that level? What did that do for you? What kind of validation? What kind of edification? What did that do for you?
Okay, so at first I was very nervous, only because what made Woman Evolve so special to me is that it does feel like sisterhood. There is this intimacy to it. And I don't want to be big for big sake, because like, I don't want it to lose this like girls' night. Yeah. Like I wanted it to have that. And so I was nervous that it would lose that. I've seen a lot of things grow and it just loses intentionality. Yep. It just feels like this is the place where you can come to promote your thing and then you just walk out. Like it had to feel intentional and real. And so I was nervous. It was probably 3 o'clock. We were starting at 7 o'clock. It's probably 3 o'clock. There were only 6,000 people checked in. We have 40,000 people registered, which to me is like, I don't care that there's only 6,000 people, but like we have a stadium and I don't like when a room feels like big and empty. Yeah. So because you know, that's all a part of the experience. It and sure so I'm is. Like, Dad, I don't think they're coming. And he was like, calm down. Where are
you? This is not your birthday party where you invited your classmates.
He's like, they've invested. They're coming.
By flights and everything.
So they came and I was still like, you know, what is this going to feel like? What is this? Da, 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 da. And the moment I walked out there to preach, it was just like, I knew in that moment, like, you can do this. You can do this. You've got what it takes.
I had friends that flew in from the Bahamas and people flying in from all over the world. And they were just so hyped up about it. Like, oh, we're going to Woman. It's going to be this and this. And I was just like, do you get a chance to hear a lot of that hoopla, or are you shielded from that?
I go through my comments. Like, I'm the only one who runs my social media. Good. So I get to see my comments. And one of the things that people said over and over again was, it was so intimate.
See how God is.
Because God is so big that he could take a stadium and still make sure you have a one-on-one encounter. And there was so many women who said, I came alone, but I met my best friend. Like, but that's been a part of the Woman Evolved thing is people like, I came to a tour, I came to a conference, and now I've got this person I'm walking life out with. And so I think the fact that it was intimate and that sisterhood was still primary, those were the things that made me feel comforted. That God, I told people when it was over, I was like, God gave me everything I asked for.
You still said that you're still, I don't want to misquote you, but you made the comment about when I said, do you feel like not so much have arrived, but know that you've been called to do this. You still saying this has still been, you know, you still feel this. Why is that? Why do you still feel after all of this that I don't want to say not worthy, but you just don't feel settled in this calling?
Mm-hmm. That is deeply personal, dear future wife. I think that every time I feel settled in something that I feel like, okay, now this is my little corner. I can work my little corner. God add something else on that. Like, God, now this was supposed to be my little corner. And now you add something. And I don't know. I think honestly, it's why I wrote the book Power Moves, because it was really God showing me that like, this power that I gave you works anywhere you place it. And I just want you to know that that same power that was with you at 23 years old when it was just you and those babies, like that power can move with you to LA. That power can move with you into Woman Evolved. Like that's my power on loan to you. And your only job is to posture yourself to seek out where you can find that power in your present. And so I wanted to help people make power moves, right? But from a place of inwardly understanding that power moves. And when you move with power, then you make power moves.
That's what I love, your take on that, because when Dr. Nita Phillips was telling me about that last week, she was like, it's a different take, because if you look at it, you go, oh, yeah, we making power moves, but you're saying power moves.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful how you said that the power that God has placed inside of you, and he moves when he's inside of you. If he wants you to move this way, he's going to move, make you move that way. And as you want to sit in that corner and be like, I'm good. This is great. I got my little family here and we great. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to stay in my little house and in Grand Prairie. We good right here. This is fine. This is nice. Thank you. I'm settled. God said, no, come on.
Yeah.
No, come on.
Over and over again. Even with Woman Evolved, I'm like, okay, we got our conference. It's 3,000 of us. That's big.
That's big. Thank you, Jesus.
Hallelujah.
Ooh,
we
thank
doing
you,
big things.
I got my podcast. Everything
okay, that's
great.
Good. That's good. Good. We doing good, Jesus. He's like, I'm going to add just a little bit more. But it's scary when you are seeing your life move in a direction that feels uncertain, that feels uncovered, that requires vulnerability. And it's taken me the last few years to really understand that, like, everywhere you go, everywhere the soles of your feet tread, I will be with you. And I had to overcome the power of shame, the power of fear, that those things had real power too. But even that power had to move out of the way so that God's power could flow.
So what made you decide to write that? Was this a moment that you had where you said, God, I'm finna embrace fully the destiny that you've given me, and I am worthy to move with this power, because it's not me. Yeah. Your power within me is moving me through these endeavors and allowing me to do great exploits. What was that defining moment that said, it's a book in me to write?
Well, so I went from giving my speeches at one to...
My speeches
to I would get finished preaching and people would be like, powerhouse, powerful, power, power. People kept using the word power to with me. And I was like, me?
Little old me.
Little old me. And I was trying to figure out, like, God, what's happening in those moments? Like, what? God was telling me, like, you are completely surrendered. It is your obedience and your authenticity that is allowing people to connect with you. He's like, but there's really nothing special about you that I won't do to any in anyone's life. And so I wrote the book because I was trying to dissect this idea of how did the girl who was quite literally limited by the power of fear, limited by the power of inadequacy. How did I become someone who now someone's saying is powerful when I only felt powerless most of my life? And God told me the moment that you realize that the shame could move, that the anxiety can move, that power moves, then power could move through you and you can make power move.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
You're about to make me shout. Lord Jesus. I felt that in my shanana. I felt that in my, as my boy Willie Moe Jr. say, listen, man, guys, What was the process of writing that? Because in the process of it, I know it took some bleeding. It took some aha moments that God began to show you within yourself, some recounts when you looked at, when you know, I said you look back over your life, you go, power move.
Power moves. I was writing this at the time that we were planning for the Woman Evolve conference.
Oh, wow.
So I was completely reliant on idea that power is going to show up there. Like, trust me, power moves, power moves, power is going to show up. And so when God did what I asked God to do in that room, when God showed up and it moved the room, I knew that I was onto something. I knew that the timing was right, though, because I was seeing so many people who were like strong, independent, but we were also talking about soft girl eras. And we were seeing toxic masculinity be turned into something that felt a lot more healthy. And I realized that power moves between ideas, that once what we thought was toxic masculinity was something we once thought was healthy. And so power is moving. I think at the time, the Queen of England had recently died. And so we were seeing succession. So I just kept seeing power moving in all of these different instances. And I wanted people to understand that power has different expressions. And so who I am when I am preaching may be different than the power that's demonstrated in a podcast, which is different than the power that I express when I'm Teray's wife. And allowing ourselves to have permission to let power be defined based off of the season and stage and role that we're in. Sometimes power moving is saying, I was the strong friend, but now I need help. I need therapy. Power moves, and I can't be limited to who you've always known me to be. I can't be restricted to what you're used to. I have to be fluid enough to move as power moves, which means that you're going to have to be nimble enough if you're going to be in relationship with me to give me the room to move the way that power is moving in my life.
I got one question.
Yes.
Did you leave that book for me?
You can.
You better get that to me. You can't just sit there and say all that. I'm like, I want to read this. Just hearing you talk about it is doing something. It's stirring something up in me. And it's making me go back and recount moments where I felt inadequate. Even this podcast, I kept feeling like, how am I going to do a podcast? I done got a divorce and all that. How am I going to talk about relationships? And I where am I qualified to talk about this? And I launched it in the pandemic, April the 15th. We just celebrated my 4-year anniversary yesterday. And I was just like, I'm not qualified for that. And then God said, just show up. Yeah. I said, but I don't have answers for people. Just show up. Just show up. Don't try to provide answers for nobody. Just have conversations with people and let people find the answers. And I was like, that's going to work. He said, I'm God. I don't fail.
Yeah.
And so when you start looking at God just moving with you, and as you work through your inadequacies in these certain areas that you felt inadequate, but who God calls, he qualifies. So my other question to you is, do you feel called?
I do.
And when did that calling, when did you accept that calling?
I think the very first Woman Evolve, when I think I had the Woman Evolve podcast before we had the Woman Evolve conference. Yep. But when I was standing in the Woman Evolve conference, I think that that is when I felt like I'm called to this. Like, I am called to create safe spaces where women can bring all of who they are into a room without fear, without judgment, and to have an encounter that is undeniable with the Holy Spirit that transforms them into what God always knew they could be. I feel called to do that, rain, sleet, or snow. I could be dog tired. If I need to record that podcast, I will send over them files at midnight. Yep. I'll be up at 5:00 in the morning responding to emails, because nothing matters more to me than going after that one girl.
Yeah.
And I want to do life with these women. And so I feel very much so called to the work that we do at Woman Evolve. I feel very, when I walked into one for the first time, I was like, I will go to this church. Like, I don't have to pastor. I don't have to teach. Like, I will go to this church. And even recently, us being back in Dallas, like, we just had our first Easter service where they allowed me to kind of like throw an idea out there that they actually took. And we did this like tag team preaching thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it was powerful. But I feel like if I trust my authenticity, the same power that was moving in LA, the same power moving at Woman Evolve, like, there's a space for it here in Dallas. And so I feel called to move wherever power takes me.
And you're back.
Yeah, I'm back.
Back in Dallas. Boy, wouldn't God just take you all around there? Do you just come back around, take what you got over there, bring it back here, just got you moving around like that. And so most times people look at it like, when I was 12 years old, the Lord came to me and called me to ministry.
Oh, yeah.
But your calling happened while you were doing ministry.
Yeah. Well, because I was, you know... when I was telling my story and giving my speeches, really think that that was ministry. You know, I thought I was helping a sister out. I was helping somebody out, but I didn't really feel like that was ministry. But I see that it was now. But in the moment, I didn't think like, oh, this is a calling. I was like, I'm going to tell my story and then I'm going to go sit down in the corner somewhere. You can only tell your story but so many times. So I'm like, this has got a short lifespan. Eventually, this is going to run out. And I think, I forget, it was probably one where PT was like, oh, after I did my first speech, he was like, it was the Sunday after his father passed. And he was like, I want you to preach the Sunday after my father because he was in a bad way. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to preach about like serving our leaders in times of need, right? And then he asked me to preach again. I was like, but there's nothing happening. What am I to pull from? And he was like, pray.
You gotta preach event-based. You see?
Right. Like,
and circumstantial.
What is happening?
What circumstance occurred? I can speak on that.
There's no circumstance. He was like, just pray about it. I was like, do what now? And I got up there. Anytime I get up there now, I just be like, I've been praying. I've been seeking the Lord. And here we go.
So from what stage, from the moment that you said, I'm going to be in LA, take me out. And the day y'all got married, what was the time span between that?
8 months.
8 months.
8 months.
Suddenly happened.
Suddenly. Yeah.
I love those.
Yeah.
And then the number 8 stands for new beginnings. So that's even more beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it's like God is just giving you a great new beginning. I love how, you know, he cultivated that gift in you. And that's amazing. Last question before we wrap up. Has there ever been like when you were growing up, it wasn't like your parents, you know, bishop or your mom said, God called you to ministry. You're going to be a preaching.
No, my sister.
So they said that to her, that yeah. She was called to be a preacher,
mm-hmm.
and they never called you to be a preacher, never mm-mm. said that.
No, but you asked any, I mean, you was at the Potter's house, yeah. Didn't want nobody checking for me. and if you, my father has said many times, like, blindsided, which was good. I've blindsided him my whole life. Pregnant at 13, pregnant with destiny. I've blindsided these people my whole life. So here we are, just still blindsiding.
Still blindsided. And the crazy thing, you blindsiding yourself too, because you follow yourself in the territories. You're like, what am I doing?
I'm
standing on stage, 40,000 people here at Globe Life.
Yes.
6,000 people registered. You like, well, 6,000 people that showed up at the time of registration. You like, they're not going to show up. And then God said, I'm going to blindside you.
I was like, because maybe they saw the baton thing and they were like, everyone registered. And then they was like, you know what? My money's funny and maybe it ain't that serious. I'm not coming. I know how to talk myself out of the thing that God has called me to do.
I can tell you this from a transparent standpoint. I see a lot of people, pastors and they'll pass the baton to their kids that I've seen it. And I'd be like, they're not even qualified. When I saw you, I knew that you were qualified. I just seen it. You can... Anybody that it's hard to dispute the anointing over your life. Mm-hmm. You would just have to be an atheist right. Because the reality is you can see it. Like you can hear you speak and you'll be like, that girl powerful. Mm-hmm. That's why they kept saying that so many times. But I've seen cases where I'd be like, why y'all giving it to this kid mm-hmm. just because it's your kid and they finna crash and burn. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You just know they finna crash and burn. But when I saw that in you, I was like, I like that.
I will say that I stay in this tension of, I gotta maintain that secret connection I have with God. And sometimes I feel bad because I see a lot of pastors are like very, like always talking about like their faith outside of their messages. But I think my relationship with God is so intimate that it still takes a lot for me to just randomly, casually put it out there. But I maintain that tension and I really respect the platform.
Yeah.
So even when my wig came off when I was preaching yeah. and people were like, oh, that was a stunt. I would never choose for that to happen. I would never.
Well, you're sitting on the couch that has an anointing to make wigs fall off. So you got to be careful what you say.
I have my wig grip extra strong today because whatever that is, I never want to experience it again. Ever.
How did you feel? Why'd you keep rocking with it on that stage?
Well, because I felt not everyone was gone, but my parents were out of town and my husband was gone. So it wasn't like I could just throw the mic to somebody and be like, finish up. So I was the leader in that moment and I wasn't going to let this moment keep, like, I'm not going to stop. What if I like was shut? What am I going to do? Stop preaching because my wig came. So I'm like, I'm going to take it off. Y'all know this isn't my hair.
So y'all know
I'm sad. I'm sad. Personally, I'm sad it's come to this, but I still have about 3 more points in this message. And we still got to open the doors at the church. So I'm going to take it off.
Sarah, what'd you say at this point? I'm sad that this happened to me. That this happened to me.
Lateris, you don't know sad like me sad. When I said amen and I hit that corner, a puddle.
You started crying.
No, I don't cry.
Okay, you're a thug.
I don't cry.
Sarah says she
but
don't cry.
I was very disappointed. I was very disappointed. And then I think also like in trauma, because we were fresh to Dallas.
Yep.
So I'm battling this idea of you're not supposed to be here.
At the same church
where I've already been humiliated. My wig. Then they putting wigs on the altar. I said, oh, gosh, she going back to L.A. She going back to L.A. This is done.
Right off that door, they wigs.
Oh, I said, there's a wig on the altar. And my dad was so, I'm also like, when I get off and my father, because he's got the message before I even have gotten there. PT's preaching in L.A. People are texting him and he's texting me like, what happened? He's going to the next service. I was like, I'll tell you after service. But I was, and then what was wild about it, so many people were like, when that happened, it felt like shame was yanked out of my body.
Yes.
Which you know is God. Because I posted it. I'm like, this is going to go viral. I'm going to be a laughing stock.
Let me get ahead of it.
I might as well just like get in front of the bullet and just like
embrace it.
It's going to be bad. You know what I mean? There was tons more positive than people who were just like making fun or upset with me, which I didn't do. My hand on the Bible, I would never, ever say, and then I'm going, y'all make sure the wig, I would never plan that. I do not sit in 2 hours of hair and makeup.
But does it fall off in the first hour?
For me to plan my wig coming off. But God really, like, as crazy as it sounds. And like I said, I was battling this idea of like, am I supposed to be in Dallas? Can I do it and still be myself? And God's like, I'm going to show you. You're not going to like it, but I'm going to show you that you can do this. Be authentic. And I'm going to take something that would be foolish on the internet, and it's going to show so many people. I was just preaching at this event in Indianapolis. It's predominantly white people. And they're like, I watched that video of when your wig came off.
He said, I watched that video where that wig fell off.
And it made me feel beautiful. It made me feel seen. It made me feel like I can show up in whatever state or form I'm in. That I like it. It's, I don't know how God did that.
Because you got to think, we live in a society where everything is filtered. Everything, you know, we'll take 700 pictures and only post one, that perfect picture, and then we'll go get it retouched, get this sucked in, this pulled out, whatever. So we're so used to seeing perfection.
Yeah.
And we're in such desperation for someone that can just show up authentic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that was just an authentic moment. Even when Whitney, when her wig fell off, I'm sitting there and I'm like, now I could have edited that out. And I'm looking like, what in the world should I do? Should I laugh? And it was funny. So I laughed. And then I asked her in the interview, she said, you going to post this? I said, I have to, because my podcast is authentic.
Yeah.
Whatever happens on here, happens on here. I don't go try to edit, take this out, make this here. Whatever happens, happens. So I said, and she said, well, there's two things from that. First of all, that if you post that, it's going to say that people going to know as a Christian, I say the N word. I said, a lot of us do. Mm-hmm. And then I said, the other one is that people who have been DMing me, give me compliments about me wearing my quote unquote natural hair.
They're going
to be like, this ain't your natural hair. And then she said, I just surrendered to the Holy Spirit. Just whatever. And that very moment she had came on the podcast, she was depressed and she was going to give up on social media because it wasn't yielding the result financially as influencers and all that type. So she said, I'm going to give up on it. And the line right before that wig fell off, she said, God can't disappoint you.
Yeah.
And then her wig fell off and it was God showing her, and that elevated her whole life from that point on. And so it was in those moments that we try to be ashamed of these moments. Is where God gets the greatest gain, you know, and in these moments is great. That when what I love about you so much is how transparent you are and vulnerable of being a daughter that's a part of this quote unquote prestigious family. But you say, I still felt like the black sheep.
Yeah.
You know, I still felt like I couldn't get stuff right. I still felt like I still wrestled with my identity of feeling, you know, hopeful and feeling, hey, this is just me. And I wanted to just stay in my little corner. You know what I'm saying? And that's who God always brings out, is the one that wants to stay in that little corner. Listen, y'all. Power moves. God moves with power. God will take the power that he has deposited inside of you and move you and orchestrate and open up doors that no man can shut and shut doors that no man can open. Lit family, we are such a supportive community of believers. And y'all like to show up. Now, listen, Sarah, like when people come on my podcast and they have a book or anything, an album, they get blown away by the support of the Lit family. And so just get ready. Get ready. They're going to be buying these books. Wow. You're going to be inundated with DMs, with people talking about how powerful this book is, how transformative it is. Take a picture, post it. Do you have a hashtag that they can use? Power Moves?
Power Moves Book.
Power Moves Book. Post that hashtag. Hold that book. Show her. Post it in your stories. Post it on your page. Blow her mind where she like, oh my God, this is absolutely crazy. These people absolutely are so supportive. So thank you, Lit Fam. And you have Woman Evolve. Registration is already opened up, right?
It is.
Website was it womanevolve.com?
Mm-hmm.
Womanevolve.com. Come to the great city of Dallas and support this amazing conference. Do you even call it a conference? What do you call it?
Experience.
That's the word I like right there.
Yeah.
Come and be a part of this experience. Sarah Jakes Roberts, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm so proud of everything that you've accomplished. I got a chance to talk to you at the end of God's Leading Lady. Mm. I was writing, they hired me to write the speeches that the people had given. And that's where I met Teray for the first time. And then went down there and talked, and he was sharing with me the story of how, would you say that you shot your shot at Teray?
I would say that.
Okay, you shot your shot. Okay, you shot your shot.
I knew it was going to sink, though. Yeah,
but you knew it.
I knew it was going to sink. I didn't just randomly shoot. You know what I mean? I had stretched. I checked the court. You know what I mean? Because I don't want y'all just out here shooting your shot. Like, do some stretching first. Make sure that there's actually a path for you.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't think it was like more of an alley-oop?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was a alley-oop because you didn't say, I'm taking you out when you come to L.A. You told him what he going to do.
For sure.
You used the anointing of God speaking through you and you spoke those things.
And that was the last time I told him what he was going to do, too. I thought that was it. That was the last time I was running anything.
Listen, I love y'all relationship. I love how y'all love each other. 10 years of marriage.
Yeah.
And so y'all coming up on year 11 in November.
It will be 10 years.
It'll be 10 in November. Mm-hmm. Well, good. Congratulations. Y'all support Power Moves. How can people connect with you on social media?
At Sarah Jakes Roberts on all the things.
On all the things. Hey, y'all give it up for my homie, Sarah Jakes Roberts, y'all.
Stay tuned to the end for a letter to my future wifey.
Been writing these love letters to you.
Ladarian, thrusted suddenly into Child Protective Services in 2015. My nephew, black, a boy. The likelihood of being adopted outside of kinship, slim to none. Armani, 16 years old, black, a boy, with 5 years in the foster care system before I even knew his name. The likelihood of ever being adopted, yep, you guessed it, slim to none. While Ladarian and Armani were trying to survive and barely thrive in an overpopulated and underfunded foster care system, I was living my own life, doing well professionally. Having been a single father with a daughter who at that point was doing well in college, it was my time to live my life, right? Wrong. I felt unsettled, tireless, agitated. There are just too many of our black children stuck in ambiguity and in the limbo of the foster care system. In 2017, I legally adopted my nephew, Ladarian. Fast forward to 2019, I had no ties to this other young king, but I felt God instructed me to adopt him also, and I obeyed. Starting over with parenting should have been enough, right? Working with various foster care and adoption agencies to help bring awareness to the countless young black kings in the foster care system should have decreased my agitation, right? Joining the board of directors of Advantage Adoption, an organization that helps find permanent adoptive homes for children in foster care, should have led to some type of resolve, right? No, not at all. None of it felt like I had done enough. I now realize that every one of those experiences was laying the fundamental foundation for my life's mission, Kingdom Royale. Kingdom Royale will be a luxury state-of-the-art home for foster boys. Our first location will be in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. We will utilize the whole person approach that instills identity, empowers them to advocate for themselves, and enlightens them regarding new perspectives and limitless options that they thought were impossible. Though the young kings will attend the local public schools that are in proximity to Kingdom Royale, our at-home curriculum will broaden their worldview through participating in the arts, attending various cultural events, learning about and engaging in multifaceted discussions about current events and even relevant historical contexts, introducing them to gardening and landscaping and even caring for our animals on our farm and on-site stables. We just launched our startup capital campaign with the goal of raising $2.8 million. Now, why $2.8 million? Well, in 2017, I created a web series in which I performed random acts of kindness for targeting the homeless community. One of the most notable successes was that one of the videos went viral, garnering 28 million views. However, one of my biggest regrets is that I didn't raise a single dollar to help in implementing a more sustainable plan for the homeless community. So throughout the years, with much remorse, I reflected on not maximizing that moment. I knew if at that time, just 10% of the viewers donated $1, we would have raised at least $2.8 million that could have really established long-term support for the homeless community, or at least started a long-term initiative to do so. This is my do-over. This is our new beginning. Together, we can attack this at the root by specifically helping our homeless Black boys who are already disproportionately represented in the American foster care system. I'm LaTerrace R. Whitfield. I've been nominated for 3 regional Emmys documenting my work with the homeless as well as my personal adoption journey. Despite those accolades, the greatest award for me is truly providing the infrastructure for a transformed life. Visit KingdomRoyale.com for more details. Crown a king and make a donation today.
Did y'all enjoy that episode? Let me tell you something. Listen, this is the time is winding down to sign up for Identifying. So make sure you go to identifyingyou.com and sign up. Class begins on May the 1st. 8-week course is going to be transformative. Let me tell you something. It's going to be absolutely life-changing. Well, here's my favorite part of the podcast where I speak to my future wifey. Dear future wifey, I envision a partnership that transcends the ordinary, a union where we not only walk hand in hand, but also stride confidently together, making power moves that leave a lasting impact on the world around us. You see, my love, I believe in the power of unity, the strength that emanates when two souls are aligned in purpose and driven by a shared vision. And as we embark on this journey together, I want you to know that our power moves will not be fueled by ego or self-interest, but by a power higher than us, a divine purpose bestowed upon us by our faith in Christ. In Him, we will find the source of our strength, the wisdom to navigate life's challenges, and the courage to pursue our dreams fearlessly. It is through this grace that we are empowered to rise above adversity, to break barriers, and to leave a legacy that reflects His love and light. So here's to us, my love, to a future filled with power moves that leave a mark on the world and a legacy that shines for generations to come. With Christ as our anchor, there's nothing we cannot achieve together. Your future hubby.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Dear Future Wifey podcast. Remember, be lit, live intentionally and transparently, and don't stop loving.
Make sure to subscribe to our Dear Future Wifey YouTube channel. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We welcome your support. Simply share our podcast with your friends and family.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.